Aham Sulabhavarta Nityuktasya Yogana. This is pure devotional service, wherein one is constantly remembering Krishna. And this remembrance of Krishna has to be anukul, it has to be favorable. Otherwise, Kamsa, such asuras like Kamsa, would have to be considered pure devotees practicing Kevala Ananya Bhakti, because they were always remembering Krishna, but their remembrance was unfavorable. They wanted to kill Krishna. So this remembrance and this Krishna Anusilanam, this cultivation of the nine different processes of devotional service, has to be anukul or favorable for it to be considered Uttama Bhakti or first class pure devotional service. So in the 8th chapter, this Ananya Bhakti was described in text 14, and in addition, Ananya Bhakti was described later as well in 26. No. Anyway, it is described. Krishna tells Arjuna, at least in Purushasuparaparta labhyastvananyaya. But this is the same bhakti that has been described in 14, always remembering him. And in this verse, Krishna says, he, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion, by pure devotional service. This is the actual process. This Ananya Bhakti is the process of actually attaining Krishna. But in the 8th chapter, in addition to explaining this Ananya Bhakti, Yoga Mishra Bhakti was described. And there was some indication of how the Karmakandis, how they're practicing their activities with karma and how they leave this world. And in the 7th chapter, those karma misra bhakta bhakti is described. Kator vidha bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna. Those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, but their Krishna conscious endeavors are mixed with other desires for betterment. And also, Jnana Misra Bhakti was described in the 7th chapter, how people are practicing devotional service, but trying to even to merge in the Supreme, or trying to get knowledge. So in 7 and 8, although these are such confidential, important chapters, in 7 and 8, they have not wholly been dedicated to Ananya Bhakti, to pure devotional service. Now, in chapters 9 and 10, there will be nothing else practically mentioned except pure devotional service. So these ninth chapter and the 10th chapter, they are considered the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, or the most confidential chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. We have said, or actually Krishna has explained, or Prabhupada explained in the purport, that they're the first 6 chapters and the last 6 chapters, but the middle 6 are more confidential. And the 2 chapters in the middle of the middle 6 are most confidential. 9 and 10. There are 18 chapters, so 9 and 10 are right in the middle. So these are the most confidential of the 6 and of the 18. And as we would imagine too, out of all the verses in the Bhagavad Gita, the key verse, the most confidential verse, is going to be right in the middle. So that's at the end of the 9th chapter, the last verse, text 34. So that will certainly be required. Manmanam bhava madbhakto madvijimam namaskuru. That will be required for you to learn. So as Krishna has described how one practicing ananya bhakti, he surpasses, and this is actually Krishna's recommendation, that simply by performing devotional service, this is what he said in the last verse in the 8th chapter, by simply performing devotional service, ananya bhakti, such a person attains all the results that can be attained from any other path, and he also reaches the supreme eternal abode. This is the glories of ananya bhakti, or pure devotional service. So, such a person, he doesn't have to worry about how he passes from this world. What does he have to worry about? Simply pleasing Krishna. This is his business. So now Krishna is going to describe the knowledge that will allow one to become that kind of an ananya bhakta. And he's going to explain how to become that type of a yogi, that type of a bhakta. So, without being prompted by any questions from Arjuna, Krishna begins chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge. Idam tute guyatamam pravaksham yanasuyave jnanam vijnanam sahitam yajyatva mokshase suvat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." And then in the second verse, "This knowledge is the king of education." So in these first three verses, which we'll go over again, but these first three verses are a glorification of this chapter. They're very important. They glorify the chapter because it is a chapter that describes intimate knowledge about Krishna. "This knowledge is the king of education," the knowledge we will now hear. "It is the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge. And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and it is joyfully performed. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service, ashradadanaha purusha, cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Apropyamam navartante." Apropya means when you obtain something, or the mystic power, the siddhi, in which you can obtain anything you want, is called prapti. You get, you can take anything you want. So this is aprapya. You do not get it. So ashradadana purusha, aprapyamam navartante. He does not obtain the result. And what happens to him? Mrityu samsara vatmini. He returns on the path of material existence and death. So these first three verses describe the glories of this knowledge. Krishna begins, "Idam tute guyatamam," saying that this knowledge is the most secret, guya uttama. It is the highest of secrets. It is the most confidential knowledge. "Idam tute guyatamam pravyaksham," that I am speaking this, anusuyave. This most glorious knowledge is being spoken by me to you. Why? What is your qualification? It is that you are not envious. Why one cannot be envious? Do you understand this? Because we all have this experience, at least I have the experience, When one has envy in the heart, when one hears about the glories of another, one will tend to think, well, I can do that. Or as Prabhupada once, he told the story of how some people were hearing that their friend was made a judge on the high court bench. And they said, and their response was, well, I don't believe it. But if it's true, he must not be getting any pay. Because this is envy. That one doesn't, who is envious, does not like to hear that anyone is very, very, very qualified. Or if he is very qualified, there has to be some drawback to his qualification, something bad about the person. So if one is envious and hears these glories of Krishna, what will happen is he won't accept them. He won't accept Krishna's position. And Krishna is specifically describing this confidential knowledge so that we become aware of his incredibly superior position. We are in this material world in illusion. In the midst of the illusory energy, serving at every moment, being harassed by different miseries at every moment. And yet, in illusion, we think that we are the most important, that our view is the best view. We are thinking we are controllers. We are thinking we are meant to enjoy. We are in so much illusion. We cannot tolerate the happiness of another. That is called envy. We cannot tolerate the supremacy or superiority of another. So in hearing, if we have this envy in our heart, when we hear Krishna's glories, we don't like it. And that enviousness of Krishna is the root cause of our being in the material world. And hearing this, if we are envious of Krishna, it will drive us down. It will not elevate us. So therefore Krishna says to Arjuna, Pravyakshana Suyave, I am explaining this to you. Your qualification is that you are not envious. You are willing to accept my words. Because after all, Krishna is going to be speaking about his own glories here. So when someone speaks about his own glories, one will think that, boy, this person is quite proud. He's quite impressed with himself, isn't he? But for Krishna to speak about his own glories is wonderful. It is the most fortunate thing for the living entity. Because who can know Krishna's glories as deeply as Krishna himself? So it is such a wonderful thing, but Krishna is going to have to speak about his own glories. So those who are not envious, it is not good for them to hear, because they will criticize. Oh, just see what he's saying. Anyone can say that they're God. Anyone can say that universes are coming out of their skin holes. There's a famous story how one bogus guru, Maharaji, he used to say that he was God, and he would have his disciples say that he was God. And then someone would say to him, let me see your universal form then. And he would say, first you have to surrender completely, as Arjuna did, then you can see my universal form. Or because you are not surrendered, therefore you cannot see my universal form. So anyone can say that they are God. That's what, how one can respond to this. But Krishna here is saying it to the devotees. He said this right in the beginning of the second chapter. Fourth chapter rather. He said, because you are my devotee and because you are my friend. What is it? Shaka Tve. Second line is Bhaktosi Me Shaka Cheti Rahasyam Itamutam. I'm telling you this very deep secret because you are my devotee as well as my friend. So here Krishna is telling, now further explaining this very deep secret of his own opulences. And this is the most confidential knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita, knowledge about Krishna's own opulences. So because you are never envious of me, jnanam vijnanam sahitam, that this knowledge and realized knowledge, jnana and vijnan, with realized knowledge, yad jatva mokshasyeshu bharam, giving you this knowledge and knowing this, mokshashe, you will be released from all maya. If you know this knowledge, this is how glorious this transcendental knowledge, just knowing it and acting on it, realizing it, jnanam vijnanam, not only theoretically knowing it, but acting on it as well, one will be released from the miseries of material life and all inauspiciousness, obstacles that plague us in our life. There are different planets, and everyone is under the control of the karma and the planets, and some of them are auspicious, some of them are inauspicious, malefics, like that. And if one fully takes advantage of this knowledge, these planets will just simply be bringing him closer to Krishna by Krishna's mercy. Because this knowledge is all auspicious. So, Prabhupada's translation is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. So why is this so confidential? Because it is devotional service free from all karma and jnana. So usually, as we've said many times, that people don't want to do anything unless they're getting something in return. Unless there's some karma, some fruit of work, some fruit of result, or some jnana, at least some knowledge. If I can't get some money or some house or some wealth or this or that and have my desires satisfied, at least let me get something, some knowledge. But this devotional service, most confidential devotional service, is free from anything else except just serving Krishna for his pleasure. And if someone has the slightest envy in them, they won't like this concept that I am meant to serve Krishna and just please him. I am just an insignificant servant of Krishna, one of many billions and billions and billions of servants of Krishna, and I am just going to serve him eternally, and I don't get anything in return. So it sounds like a horrible factory. But if we understand who Krishna is, if we have knowledge who Krishna is, and our heart is full of bhakti, then it is ecstasy, it is prem, the prayojan, it is the spiritual world, it is goloka. But if we're envious, we don't like this. So this knowledge is most confidential because it won't even appeal to people who are not qualified. It won't appeal to people who are not qualified because that's like in the West, if someone says, what do you do for, you know, if you're following the four rules, what do you do for pleasure? So our answer is, we serve Krishna. They think we're crazy. They think that someone is exploiting us. That's just exactly what they think, that somewhere on top there is some cult leader who is making all those poor boys and girls, brainwashing them and making them go out and just taking advantage of their naivete and foolishness and exploiting them for his own pleasure. And actually there is someone on top exploiting us for his own pleasure, and that is Krishna. And that is the business of the jiva.
the jivatmas,
to be engaged in Krishna's service. And then what happens if the jiva is engaged in Krishna's service in an unmotivated way? Then he enjoys on an equal level as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by giving up the concept of being the enjoyer and accepting the role, his natural constitutional position of being the enjoyed, then he actually becomes the enjoyer. He actually enjoys more than anyone, even more than Krishna himself. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, he has Krishna saying that though Bharat Muni, and people say Bharat Muni is a great authority in drama, in Rasa Shastra, Natak Shastra. So he has said that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally. And Krishna says that those who think that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally, they do not know the taste of Brajaras, of Braja Bhakti. They don't know what is like in Braja, where Krishna himself says that the beloveds, the objects, or rather the Ashray, the source of the love of Krishna, the devotees, they enjoy thousands of times more than the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. That Ladini Shakti, the Lord's pleasure potency, certainly it is His, and it is certainly sweet, and it is certainly wonderful, but when it is placed in the heart of the devotee, it is even sweeter than when Krishna is possessing it in himself. So therefore he places it in the heart of the devotee. And the example given by the acharyas is just like someone may have the capacity to blow air and whistle through his own mouth. And it is certainly very wonderful if someone can do that. But when that blowing ability of air through his own mouth is placed in a flute, then how much even sweeter is what is produced. So when the Ladini Shakti of the Lord's internal energy is placed within the devotee, it is even sweeter than the Lord's own possession of it. So similarly, the devotee even enjoys more. So what is the process of learning this Ananya Bhakti? What is the process? It is hearing. This has been said in the 7th chapter where Krishna said, just hear from me and I will speak this knowledge from you. This is the main process, and it is, and this is why, as in the next verse it's going to say, it's this knowledge, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam, this knowledge is susukam kartam avyam. It is happily, very happily performed. There are many reasons why Krishna consciousness is happily performed. And one of them is because it's very easy. And why is it easy? Because it's based on hearing. All you have to do is sit. You don't even have to move your tongue. You can't even close your ears. It's something that's already open. It's already working. You try. They have so many different kinds of varieties of earplugs. They have the little ones that you fit in your ear, in this ear, and then you stick it in this ear, the waxy ones, and then they have big ones that fit over your ears. But nothing works. The ears always hear. Right? Nothing works. You have used Belinda. Nothing works, right? So we can't stop from hearing. Even if we want to stop from hearing, all we have to do is practically just sit and exist, and we'll hear. And even animals can hear. That's how easy it is. Animals can't practice pranayama and asans except the dogs, they do one asana. You know, how do they do that? It's called Ardha Mukhasana. Have you ever seen them do that thing like it? Right? You know that one? The dogs do that. And also the Vrindavan dogs, they have some, they do some very unique things. I've never, in any country I've been in so many countries, I've never seen dogs sitting on walls like this, very casual, you know, with their hands crossed like this. Only in Vrindavan do they sit like that. So even dogs, although they can, maybe they can perform one or two asanas, and maybe they're very casual, but even they can hear. And even Bharat Maharaj, after he took the body of a deer, he went back to Pulaha Ashram from his deer birthplace, and he associated with sadhus, and he heard. So it is easy for that reason, because it's based on hearing, which is so purifying. And it's also sukham. This process is so easy because the senses are engaged. Because we heard for six chapters, we heard about how difficult this jnana yoga was and sankhya yoga. Because one has to give up all engagement and just sit there in the effort to attempt to avoid karma or activities and their reactions. So it is so difficult to do that. But in Krishna consciousness, the senses are all engaged. We feast on delicious Krishna prasadam. We work for Krishna. We sing, we dance. And we see the beautiful forms of Radha Shyamasundara Krishna Balaram Gaura-Nitai. So all the senses, we smell fragrant incense. So because the senses are engaged, it is the sukham. So Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam. So in the last verse, Idam Tute Guyatamam. So Guya Uttama means the most confidential, is the most confidential knowledge. And in this verse, it is Raja Vidya. It is the king of education and the king of confidential knowledge, Raja Guyam. And just as the king, he doesn't put his treasury out so everyone can see it and count it. Rajaguyam, he keeps it Rajaguyam, he keeps it as the king's secret, how much he actually has in the treasury. So similarly, devotees should also keep the treasure of their, the actual treasure of their lives, of their Krishna consciousness, hidden like this. And therefore Krishna has hidden these treasures in the middle, right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita, and it has taken us 9 weeks to reach the treasure chest of the Bhagavad Gita. So Raja Vidya, it is the king of education, the king of Vidya, the king of knowledge. That means the soul and the super soul are understood, not just Vidya. Because Vidya is still in the kingdom of Maya. Vidya, born of the mode of goodness, knowledge, that we are not our body, but we are spirit soul, is in the kingdom of Maya. But Raja Vidya is in the transcendental kingdom, because it is also knowledge about the super soul. And Raja Guyam, again, pure devotional service. Pavitram idam uttamam. It is the purest, and it is transcendental. And pratyaksha, by direct experience, agamam avagamam, it is understood. And again, it is dharmam. In the first verse, it is the principle of religion. Here it is said, it's the principle of religion, it is actual religion. And in text 1, it is jnanam vijnanam. It has, this is real jnanam, real jnana platform. And this is real dharma, not dharma, artha, kama, moksha, not dharma to get, not religion to bring us to heaven, But this is religion, real Dharma, that will bring us to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And sometimes we criticize jnana, that devotees are not interested in jnana. Jnana karma anavrita. But this is real jnana. This is jnana about Krishna. It is not just about we are not the body. So this jnana, this super jnana, this Raja Vidya jnana, this knowledge we are interested in. And susukam kartam avyayam. So it is susukam. We've already explained why it is susukam. Why? Two reasons.
Too easy.
Too much easy. Why is it too much easy?
Because I have to sit in here.
And second reason.
Even animal.
Yes. And the second reason? That was the first reason still.
And
something. Yes, you're correct. It is something. The senses are engaged. Because one doesn't have to give up the activities of the senses. So it is so amazing that with material senses we can perform spiritual work. Because we would think, naturally we would think, that with material senses we can only perform material work. And materialistic people who don't understand devotional service, they see the devotee working and they think it is material work. Because how could the material senses perform spiritual work? But they can. By the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. They do, because Krishna has a mission. And working in his mission is spiritual work. So this is why it is susukam. It is, and to execute is susukam, and it is avyayam. Mm. But are you comfortable and everything, too? So it is avyayam also. Avyayam means everlasting. And bhakti, this means it's beyond the modes of material nature. It is bhakti that's being talked about. Because this knowledge that we are Krishna's servant, it does not end ever. There is sadhana. Rupa Goswami has described in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are three stages of devotional service. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So the same principle is there, that the devotee serves the Lord. In sadhana, when we're imperfect, in bhava bhakti, when we are more perfect, and in prema bhakti, when we are most perfect, the same principles are exactly true. The same principles of devotional service, service to Krishna, are exactly true. So there is no change. For other paths, they will worship Krishna, and then when they become liberated, they will give up the worship of Krishna. They will do so many things. They'll practice asanas, and then when they're liberated or become in dhyana, they give up practicing asanas. But this is no changing. Just like Prabhupada said, that the result of chanting is more chanting. So it's not that one day we're going to find out that there's some new knowledge that's completely different. Now you have been chanting, now you can give up your mantras and do something else. No, no, no. This is avyayam. This is everlasting knowledge and it remains the same. So we can have confidence in this. So this knowledge, therefore, is the king of education. The most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, because it is a pure devotional service. It is uncontaminated. It is jnana kama anavrita. And because it gives direct perception of the self, by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and is joyfully performed. Now, one other reason, you ready? Why it is susukam. You have two already, okay? You want a third one?
Because you don't come back.
Because what?
You don't come back to the material world.
Yes, you don't come back. But why? Another reason why the practice actually is easily performed, because as Prabhupada explains, on page 454, in the first paragraph, the process of devotional service is a very happy one, Sasukam. Why? Devotional service consists of Shravanam, Kirtan, and Vishnu, so we can simply hear the chanting of the glories of the Lord, or attend philosophical lectures on transcendental subjects given by authorized acharyas. And here's another one. Simply by sitting one can learn. Then one can eat the remnants of food offered to God, nice palatable dishes. In every state, devotional service is joyful. One can execute devotional service even in the most poverty-stricken condition. The Lord says, Patram, Pushpam, Palam Toyam. He is ready to accept from the devotee any kind of offering, never mind what, even a leaf of flower, a bit of fruit, or a little water, which are all available in every part of the world, can be offered by any person, regardless of social position, and it will be accepted if offered with love. So what does Krishna want? What does this process consist of? Something so difficult? No, it consists of patram pushpam palam toyam yomam bhakti prayat. So even just giving, what could be easier than giving Krishna a leaf? Imagine, I mean, you're even more difficult to satisfy than that. Yes? Imagine if I just gave you a leaf for lunch. Even if I offered it with devotion, you would be very, you would eat it, yes, you would take it, but then you would say, where's the rest? But Krishna, when something is offered with devotion, he accepts it and he is satisfied. See? I told you. Now this is such, this knowledge that we're going to hear is so wonderful. We should accept it based on the authority that Krishna himself is speaking it. And what happens if we don't have the proper mental state to accept it? And Krishna explains that. And again, this is basically envy if we can't accept a Shraddhana Purusha. This is what happens. A Shraddhana Purusha, that means there is Shraddha, that means one who has faith, or a Purusha who has faith is Shraddhana Purusha, and one without faith is Ashraddhana Purusha. And then Dharmas Yasya Parantapa, towards this process of religion, O killer of the enemies. What happens to him? Aprapyamam Navartante. Without obtaining me, he comes back. And what does he come back to? Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. This miserable world of death and samsara. Samsara Dava Nalalita Loka. Just like there is Davanalakund. And what happened to Davanalakund? Rahul. Nandu Baba.
Krishna's forest fire.
Yeah, forest fire. It's a big, big forest fire that came. And we all know what happened. Krishna told the boys to close their eyes and he swallowed the forest fire. He told them to close their eyes that time too, or was that the one by Bandirama?
I don't know.
Because in Bandiravan there was a big forest fire. This was the day after the killing of Kaliya's serpent, this one over here. Not chastising of Kaliya's serpent. Krishna was there with all the cowherd men and the cowherd boys and everyone, and they slept there, and the next day there was a forest fire. And Krishna swallowed it, Davanala Kun. So Davanala means forest fire. And Bandiravan, Krishna told the boys to close their eyes. They were with him. And he said, close your eyes. And they closed their eyes, and the fire was gone. And they opened their eyes, and they were sitting under a big bandiravat, a big, big banyan tree again. And why did Krishna tell the boys to close their eyes? Because we know this already, that Krishna already had a bad experience with these cowherd boys, because cowherd boys are very naughty and they have tattletales. They get you in trouble with your parents, because one day the cowherd boys went to see Mother Yasoda and said, Krishna is eating dirt. Krishna is eating dirt. Krishna is eating dirt. It is not proper. Mother Yasoda, are you going to let your son Krishna eat dirt? Krishna is eating dirt. So Mother Yasoda brought Krishna, are you eating dirt? And she chastised him and made him open his mouth and show universes and things like that. So Krishna was thinking, these boys, they always tell on me and get in trouble. When I eat dirt, they tell. So what happens if I eat fire now? They see me swallowing the forest fire. They're going to really complain to Mother Yasoda. And then I'm really going to get into trouble. So he said, close your eyes. Don't look. And no looking or peeking. So in this way, dava. Dava nala means forest fire. So samsara dava nana lila loka. So this world is a blazing forest fire. Material existence is a forest fire. And forest fires are very dangerous. Once in Hong Kong, we were giving classes to young boys, the young boys and girls of the Indian community there. And after telling them this story, one boy named Lalu said to me, "Who started the forest fire?" So I said, because Prabhupada was coming very soon. So I said, well, Prabhupada's coming in a couple of weeks. You ask him. So, and then I completely forgot about it. Then when Prabhupada came, there were 150, 250 people who came to meet Prabhupada in the Park Hotel. Funny how just next door to the temple was where the temple in Hong Kong is now. The Park Hotel is where Prabhupada stayed.
Chatham Road.
On Chatham Road. And our temple was on Ruby Road at that time. So Prabhupada gave a lecture in the class, and when everyone was there, he came and we chanted. And Prabhupada spoke for a while, and then he asked any questions. So this one boy, Lala, raised his hand and said, "Who started the forest fire?" Prabhupada looked at him very seriously and said, "No one started the forest fire. Samsara dava nanavida loka." But this forest fire of material existence, the pain and the suffering that comes from material existence, no one has to do anything to give you pain and suffering. It happens by its own accord, like a forest fire. And when one is surrounded by a forest fire, and it's blazing, and the heat is intolerable, one cannot do anything by his own power. This is what the experience is. Even in this advanced modern technological age, when there's a big forest fire blazing in Australia or northwestern United States, all they can do is wait for the rain to come. All they can do is wait. They have so much technology that they just must wait for rain. So that rain of mercy that extinguishes the forest fire, the blazing forest fire of material life, is the mercy of Krishna coming down to Guru. So therefore, samsara dava narali loka tranaya karana pranatana kam pratasya kalyana guna navasya vande uroshi charanam. So one has to have faith. An envious person cannot have faith. So the third reason why it's easily performed, because Krishna, all he's asking is a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, if it is offered with devotion. So one has to have faith. How can one progress? How can one go on unless one's faith is strong? Prabhupada explains in the purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes we say it is not faith, it is science. But faith is so important nonetheless. One's advancement can be measured in one's faith. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. And just logically, we can understand that if one doesn't have faith that all good results will come simply by serving Krishna, then how can one serve Krishna with full enthusiasm if one's not sure? Just like if you have a job and you're working for a man and you're not sure if he has the capacity to pay you or not. Or if you're in a war and you have a gun but you're not sure if it's going to work or not. So will you want to do your service properly if you don't have these faiths? So similarly, how could one, without faith, serve Krishna with all his heart, with man, vach, and body? Mind, words, and body. Naturally, if one doesn't have this faith, he'll always going to be wondering, well, what if Krishna doesn't protect me, so therefore I need a huge bank account, I have to do this, I have to do that, to protect myself. So when one has conviction that by serving Krishna, one can achieve all perfection, that is called faith. That is called real faith. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, yata taro mula nase chanena tripyanti tat skandabujo pashakha pano paharatscha yatendriyanam tataiva savar hanamachutateja. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all the other living entities. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Okay, we'll stop here.
It seems that by faith we mean more like certainty, just like the example you gave with the gun. It's not that we want to have faith if it works, we want to be absolutely certain if we go to war. We also want to be absolutely certain that we get our paycheck. We don't want to have faith. We want to be certain.
Well, how can you have to be certain without faith?
So that's what I mean. Does it mean certainty?
It means faith. Ashradhadanaha Purusha.
But usually in the West, when we learn about this faith business,
I know. That's why I said usually we decry faith, but it's not a faith, it's a science.
So we need something else.
No, we mean faith.
Yeah, real faith.
Yes. Ah, real faith. Not like the other guys.
Can I have another faith?
Huh?
Can I have another faith?
Are you satisfied with that?
Yeah.
Really? Let me shed some light on this. It means realization. It means deep realization.
Without any doubt.
See, because even if you shoot your gun 100 times, is there any certainty it's going to go off the 100th and first time? You have to trust in something sublime that's beyond. No one can know the future. If the only way you can be certain about something is like you're taking a film of the 101st bullet shot and then you rewind it. So if you knew the future that it was going to go off and then you do it and then you say, okay, the 101, I have full certainty, and then you don't need faith. So it's like that. Well, then your faith is strong. That would be more appropriate. Just like what?
The faith that the sky is not going to fall down on our head.
Good point. But one never knows. Just like we have faith that water will come out of the tap when we turn the thing. It's like that in Denmark, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, not here. The laws of material nature work differently in Vrindavan.
What are the symptoms of a person who has has this nice feeling.
Just says he's fully surrendered, because faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one achieves all perfection. So he's Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. He's serving Krishna with full confidence, with full faith. He has no other business. He has nothing else to do except serving Krishna.
So we could actually say that all these persons that claim they have faith in this and that, they don't really have real faith.
Well, we'd have to, if they claim they have faith, we have to test how much they're doing it. If people have faith in God, it's not like only devotees of Krishna have faith. Faith is born out of the mode of goodness. This is explained in the 17th chapter. If one doesn't have any mode of goodness in him, he will not have faith, any faith. But many people in the world have faith in God. But sometimes it's not very scientific. But they have faith.
When you say faith comes from mode of goodness, you mean faith in God, right? Because if you have faith in demigods or...
Still, that's...
That's from the mode of goodness.
You can't have faith without the mode of goodness.
So even if someone has...
I'll check that out. There must be some mode of goodness, because you get people who are completely cynical about everything. And everyone has at least a little mode of goodness in them, because nothing is pure, even in the material world, even ignorance. There's no pure ignorance in this world. At least there's a little passion and goodness in it. Okay, thank you very much. So tomorrow we shall meet again. We hope, we have faith, we will meet again. Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would never say this and this will happen. He will say this and this will happen if Krishna allows.